News Talk Radio CJAD 800 presents the CEO Series, insights from top business leaders. Your host is Carl Moore.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders. Some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, former international president of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, president and CEO of the luxury jewelry retailer Maison Birx. Thank you, Jean-Christophe, for joining us today. So, Jean-Christophe, tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what did your family do for a living?
Well, my father was actually a judge, a French judge, and he was posted in Morocco by the French government for a number of years. And this is where he was living with my mother when I was born. So I had the privilege to be born in Morocco, having no relationship at all with the country, which is absolutely fabulous and beautiful. But we originally come from the southwest of France. And after Morocco, my parents came back to France. And this I grew up in Toulouse, which is a great place where I spent my years from the age of 6 to approximately 20 years old. So that's where I grew up.
Do you remember Morocco a bit?
Yeah, a bit. We've been back since.
You're listening to Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Birx. At that time, Morocco was associated with France, so a judge would go be sent by the French government to Morocco.
Yeah, my father was originally a judge there, but then he was assigned to training Moroccan judges because Morocco had gone through its independence. It was not a colony as such; it was called a protectorate from France. So France was collaborating and supporting the Moroccan administration, and that, as far as the legal system was concerned, that my father was contributing to making Morocco a better place.
Why not be a lawyer?
I studied law. I actually studied law together with business because I hesitated. I didn't know really what I wanted to do. When in doubt, I decided to choose both, which is unusual in France. But I organized myself and I enjoyed both actually very much. And I started studying at Toulouse Business School and the University of Law in Toulouse, and then after a couple of years, I took advantage of an exchange program. I went to the UK. I went to Nottingham and studied business at Trent University, and then in order to keep my legal studies moving, I moved to actually La Sorbonne in Paris. There was at the time, I'm talking here about the late 80s, it was the only program in France that had implemented a distance learning. So I, thanks to that system, I studied law at Sorbonne in Paris. It was not very elaborate. You would have your books, and you would receive tapes, the cassettes, to listen to lectures and seminars. So that's what I did in the evening after my legal classes. Most of the students in Nottingham would go to the pub, which is normal with student life. But I enjoyed law so much. I thought it was so intellectually stimulating. I really enjoyed studying law in the evening, listening to my tapes.
But it's interesting because it's almost a precursor to today's studying by Zoom. What you missed is that, the Sorbonne is one of the world's great universities, but you didn't have any buddies there. You didn't go out drinking or dating with anyone. You were stuck in Nottingham. So it's almost like what our students might be doing today.
Well, it sounds like I was a nerd, but I don't feel I was. You know, I was just I was enjoying social life as well. It was just a question of organization for me. Probably I was sleeping less hours than other students.
So, in Toulouse, do you have a different accent than Paris or Lyon or other parts of France?
Yes, you know, every part in France have their own accent. We have a what is generally called southwestern accent, which is probably more singing than other parts. You know, it's quite pleasant. It's probably equivalent to what the Scottish accent could be for British people. If you have a call center in the UK, if you set it up in Scotland, you know that you will have a friendly relationship with a person on the line.
Have you lost your accent? Do you have more of a Parisian kind of a...
I can speak a flat French accent, but don't provoke me. I can have a very heavy Toulouse accent, which can be funny.
So did you go into law, or what was your first job after university?
After my business studies, I actually went from Nottingham to Paris because I had, and that was mandatory at the time, in order to finish the law degree at Sorbonne, you had to do the final year, the master's degree. You had to be physically present. So I went to Paris. I had completed my business studies, and my last year at university was just dedicated to law, in order to pay for my room in Paris, I had to find a job, and I found, coincidentally, a student placement job at Cartier International, which was the Cartier head office, where I was working part-time every morning, doing statistics for them, and in the afternoon I was going to university to study law and finish my degree. And a year after, once I had completed my law degree, Cartier offered me a job. That's how, by coincidence, I started in the luxury goods industry.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill. I'm speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Berks. Jean-Christophe, you're very cool. You did early Zoom and you did big data. Decades before my students have got into that, so you're very cool, evidently. Why not law? Why did you decide to pivot to luxury goods and not go into law, as your father had done as a judge, etc.?
I could have done, frankly, but my father was a lawyer. My eldest brother studied law in France and also moved internationally. He did a law degree at Harvard Law School in Boston, My eldest brother is 8 years older than me. I always admired what he was doing, and I could have done law. Just by accident, I fell in love with what I was doing at Cartier, and when they offered me a job, I didn't think twice about it. I thought it was kind of cool to take a job. Little did I know that I would never, turn back and reconsider my life. I've been happy since.
Clearly, you're a leader today as CEO of Berks. When did you start thinking that you might be a leader? What was your first leadership role where it occurred to you, maybe I could lead?
I don't think I was planning to be a leader in business and professionally. But this is a very good question, frankly, Carl. When I was a kid, I was class representative. I was elected class representative every year. I started to play rugby because when you are from Toulouse, you have to play rugby. There is no option. It's like if you are in Montreal, if you grow up in Montreal and don't play hockey, you're a loser. In Toulouse, you have to play rugby, otherwise you're a loser. So I played rugby and I loved it. And I was, I was young and there was nothing important, but I was captain of my team and I enjoyed it. It was, it was something that came naturally, maybe. I never reflected on that, but taking care of people was really important to me.
We're speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Berks. Coming up, we'll discuss the devastating impact of COVID-19 on the luxury goods industry. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of the luxury jewelry retailer Birks. Jean-Christophe, in your long career, have you ever experienced a crisis like COVID-19?
Never, and I don't think anyone has. This is totally unprecedented. The first crisis I experienced professionally was in the early 90s when we had the Iraqi war and the luxury goods industry, because, of course, that war affected the Middle East, and the Middle East is a very strong territory for luxury goods. We moved to a crisis management mode at Cartier International, where I was posted. That's the first memory I have of crisis management. But nothing compared to what we are experiencing today. Nothing.
When did you choose to close the Birks stores? Was there a specific date where you said, ladies and gentlemen, we have to shut them down?
Frankly, we didn't choose. We followed public, authorities' instructions. On the 18th of March, that's when we gave instructions to all our stores to lock down. It happened very quickly, and we didn't think twice about it. We thought it was going to be for a couple of weeks. I went back to visit some stores, and including our head office. Your question just reminds me of 2 weeks ago. I went to see our head office, because I hadn't been there, for nearly 3 months. And I realized when I went through the open space we have in the head office in Montreal, how sudden everything was, because I saw packets of biscuits on desks, some jumpers on the back of the chairs, water bottles, closed or open, as if something sudden had happened and people had disappeared from the ghost town and never came back. That was quite eerie. So this is just to describe how everything happened very soon, and we didn't think twice about it. There was very little preparation.
Did you set up a war room fairly quickly after to get your top people together and say, what's the way forward from here?
Yes, I was very privileged. First of all, we moved to video conferencing on a daily basis. We had a daily meeting 7 days a week with my senior management team and a few additions of key people. So it's eight of us meeting every day since the 18th of March. So that's our crisis management team. 8 weeks after the lockdown started, we created another team called the After COVID Management Team in order to plan for the reopening of stores and the reopening of the head office, in order to create all the protocols and the training packages for all the employees that we would call back to return to business.
Were they two different teams? Or was it a lot of overlap?
There was a lot of overlap, about 50% of overlap.
But it's the forwards looking, which is interesting. Did sales really fall off a cliff when you closed the stores? Or was there some business online?
What we decided to do immediately, and I'm glad we did, we set up two systems. One is, of course, we reinforced our e-commerce team because e-commerce sales went through the roof for us. When I say through the roof, is not in dollar terms, but in percentage growth terms, we more than doubled our sales in e-commerce compared to the same period last year. So our e-commerce team needed support. But the other initiative we took, we created what we call the concierge service for clients, who some of them are VIP clients, who, regardless of lockdown, need to be serviced. And we selected our top five stores, and behind closed doors, we had three employees per store working full-time to actually manage the inventory and go back to the old mail order service.
You're listening to Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Berks. Thank goodness that FedEx and the Canada Post, et cetera, kept working because it really allowed your business. But when you look at online sales as a small percentage of your overall sales.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, one thing that the luxury goods industry learned during this period, and probably overall the retail industry, is it was almost like the best possible business case, laboratory case for e-commerce. Because imagine a business case where you decide to close every single bricks and mortar outlet and observe what happens with e-commerce. Of course, e-commerce grew very fast, but it didn't replace bricks and mortar. I don't know any retailer anywhere in the world who has realized that e-commerce was taking over from bricks and mortar. So the big lesson from this crisis is actually that bricks and mortar retail is not dead. It's not the apocalypse of retail. I believe that the solution is with omnichannel and a good and smart combination between bricks and mortar and e-commerce, definitely, is what we learned from this crisis.
So online is growing. It's grown a lot, but you're still saying bricks and mortars. Is that particularly in the luxury good, or are you saying you think it's true in other retail sectors as well?
Well, it's true for luxury goods, but I realized by talking with colleagues that it's also true for other industries. And in the luxury goods, you know, I mean, depending on what category of luxury goods we talk about, we are specialized in what is commonly called hard luxury, which is essentially jewelry and watches. But you also have a soft luxury goods that includes alcohol, fashion, fragrance, soft products, and also a very strong segment of the luxury goods industry is the experiential luxury with hotels and spas and resorts, everything related to travel. In our case, I specifically observe what's happening in the hard luxury goods industry, and I believe we have been less affected than experiential luxury and soft luxury, like especially fashion.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill. I'm speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Berks. How many stores does Berks have currently?
We have 30 stores in Canada.
Any in the U.S. or just Canada?
No, in the U.S. we have stores selling the Berks jewelry brand, but we don't own those stores.
How many employees would there be in the 30 stores when they're all up and running again?
All together with our head office, we have about 350 employees.
So you didn't have to lay off too many people.
We did lay off many people. We had no choice. We had 90% of our employees were temporarily laid off.
Did the government programs help them?
Yes. That was good from a social standpoint, but that was positive. That was a safety net from a social consideration, but people need to work. They really, you know, the CERB program has been so generous that some people prefer to stay at home than work. We heard that. It's not true. Frankly, the nature of human beings is that they want to feel useful. They want to feel needed. And in our case at Berks, all I heard was people saying, don't pay me, but give me something to do. And the need to work, the need to feel needed was much higher than the few cases that we may have heard about people wanting to stay at home doing nothing.
We're speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of the luxury jewelry retailer Berks. Up next, we'll talk about his approach to leadership during this time of crisis. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of luxury jewelry retailer Berks. What is luxury? What is a luxury good? What makes it a luxury good as opposed to Dollarama?
It's the aspiration. It's the appreciation. It's something very deeply embedded in human beings, which is the need to create and to manifest a token of love, appreciation, pride, success. And in terms of, in economic terms, if you could create a formula, I think that the desirability of the product always has to be high. The desirability for the product justifies the margin, justifies the intangible value of the product. So in the luxury good industry, there is this formula, this ratio, where availability has to be lower than desirability. So the luxury product, generally speaking, is not very available. There is an excess of desirability. That's what we call exclusivity in our industry. There are a lot of intangibles in our industry.
So how do you manage to find the employees that have the right attitude at Burke's, that they reinforce the Burke's brand and the atmosphere and the essence of Burke's, which we see in the blue box? That's a very famous Canadian symbol. How do you find the right employees to reflect that?
It's a very tricky question because it's not a talent related to the CV. You can have a very successful individual from an academic standpoint, but the attitude is very important. And I believe that empathy is extremely important. You have to care a lot for people, especially if you work in the sales division or close to the sales division. You always have to serve someone and want to please. Sometimes you don't teach it. Sometimes you can't teach it. We invest a lot in training. You know, it's very much like the service industry in hotel and restaurants. You can't replace a good waiter.
Do you ever go to the counter and for a few days a year work with clients just to keep your hand in the game?
I used to, and I visit stores a lot. I try to be close to the team and listen to them, but unfortunately, in my current job, I don't service clients anymore.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill. I'm speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Burke's. What is your biggest revenue store in the country? Is it in Toronto, Calgary, Montreal? Where is the couple stores that are the biggest revenue producers?
We have three what we call the flagship stores. Montreal on the corner of Philippe Square and St. Catherine Street. We have Toronto on the corner of Bloor and Bay. Calgary in a TD Square mall. And we have in Vancouver on West Hastings, our Western flagship store.
How does a crisis like this affect one's leadership and how you think about leadership? What have you learned during the crisis, Jean-Christophe?
This crisis, Carl, has been a very challenging moment for not just Burke's, for many, many industries and many CEOs. Nothing like this could be anticipated. We don't learn this in business schools, and there is no book yet about a crisis like this. I have found it not only very stressful, but very challenging from an intellectual standpoint, where we have to be creative, very agile, very adaptable. We learn as we do things under a crisis like this. It was challenging from an emotional standpoint. It was challenging from a psychological standpoint, just managing relationships with people. People are not used to working from home and having to handle stress, very high levels of stress by themselves, behind their telephone or behind their screen. So If you ask me in a few years from now, I will say I have enjoyed it a lot. But experiencing the moment was not very enjoyable. I was very lucky to have a fabulous team with me. That in fact, saved us. We were very, very close together.
Seems like empathy, I think you mentioned earlier, is one of the really important things during the crisis. How did you display empathy to your staff and particularly to your direct reports?
First of all, we met every day with my team. We had two teams, one crisis management team and one team that we called After COVID, which was managing the anticipation once we returned to business. The way we were managing our meetings was no agenda, no minutes taken. So extremely informal, where there was room for jokes and debates, conversations, taking care of people. We spent a lot of time talking. We felt very close in spite of the distance because everyone was at home behind a screen. Another initiative that I took very early on, and I was supported by my team, was actually to connect directly with every single employee of the company, which had not been done before. We never do that when we work under normal circumstances. But we created a weekly webinar with the CEO. That was called the weekly webinar every Thursday with the CEO, where the entire company, 350 people, could connect and listen to what the update I was giving them on a weekly basis, followed by a Q&A session, which was unprepared, not scripted, where I was directly answering the question from anyone at any moment in time, any question. I wanted to take that risk because it was a risk to face every possible individual, every employee from the company, because, and I think we can talk about empathy there. Some people, Carl, in our industry, in the retail industry, it's made of many different people from many different backgrounds. Some have education, some don't. Some are senior, some are junior. Some live in a 500 square feet condo with a spouse and two or three children. We had to take care of these people. I was made aware that some of our young professionals had children under the age of 5 or 4 at home to take care of them. And they didn't know what to do, and they were turning crazy. So creating a weekly connection with them was the moment of truth where they could actually feel a sense of belonging to the company. They felt taken care of. It's not by sending memos that you take care of people. They had to see my face, and they had to see how ready I was to be unprepared and answer their concerns. And it had to come directly from the top. So the objective of those weekly webinars were to be as authentic and as genuine as possible. We actually kept a lot of people going during that period.
What role did the board of directors play during the crisis? Were they quite active in the way forward?
I count myself lucky. We have a very senior board, very experienced. And one thing that we had was a very close collaboration. I was writing to them extremely regularly, keeping them updated on management's decisions and initiatives. Sometimes we felt we improvised, but you know what, you have no choice. But I count myself lucky because our board was not at all confrontational or toxic or nervous. On average, we probably have met once a month, which is, by comparison with many other companies, is not a lot. But I felt a very strong support and trust in management.
We're speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Birx. Up next, we'll talk about his work-life balance during this pandemic. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Berks. Your value chain comes from all over the world. Did you have shortages from supplies of your value chain bringing products to Canada?
Well, to a certain extent, a lot of those products were not needed because our stores were closed. A lot of the products, most of the products we sell come from Europe. The watches come from Switzerland, which is the hub of the luxury watch industry. Jewelry comes from France and Italy, essentially. A lot of the production centers, workshops, and factories were closed in Europe. But we didn't have a significant shortage of goods. We didn't experience a break in the supply chain. That's very different from other industries like, for example, the fashion industry, which I know has had a significant systemic issues with their supply chain. It's not the case in the watch and jewelry industry.
Jean-Christophe, how old are your kids?
I have four kids between the age of 23 and 13.
So how many are at home with you and your wife during the lockdown?
Three of them doing schooling from home.
So how mad was it in your household?
Surprisingly, not mad at all. That's a great surprise because we actually bought laptop computers for our kids to do their schooling on week one of the lockdown. And their school have been extremely well organized. They had their lessons and via webinar format. They had group work, they had homework, they had tests online, and they have been extremely quiet. I suspect that some of that time was not just spent studying. Nevertheless, it was very quiet. I asked one of my boys, who's 13-year-old, you know, what he does all day long, because I don't hear him. I was getting worried, and he said, I watch documentaries. So
that was... Were you or your wife involved in part of their schooling, or were they fairly self-propelled?
No, I mean, we're lucky. I mean, frankly, our children are, you know, teenagers, adolescents. I really count myself lucky because I can't imagine how parents with small children in primary school or kindergarten, how they have coped during that period of time. You know, grandparents were not allowed to see their grandchildren. Parents had to stay at home with sometimes babies all day long. How do you cope? I don't know. I have profound admiration for the families who are, you know, still together after 3 months.
You're listening to Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Berks. Are you working more because you're working from home than you would on your normal routine?
This is a very good question. In terms of organization, we did learn a lot. And this is one of the traps, I think, from working from home. You start working more. You start letting, almost like an octopus, you're letting your business life taking over with its tentacles. You get up in the morning, you switch off the computer. It's so easy. You check your emails. You know, lunchtime comes and you are doing something, so you keep doing the same thing and you have a little bite by the computer. And in the evening, you don't after dinner, you just check again. Thank God my wife is extremely disciplined and she imposed what she called the detox moments, where I was not allowed to touch neither my mobile phone nor my computer. And very quickly, I told my team, you need to have a discipline. We need to impose a discipline on ourselves. Do cardio, do meditation, yoga. There are hundreds of courses online in order to relax and let go. And it's only through a very strict discipline that you can work from home.
What's your exercise program? How are you keeping in shape, or what are you doing to get away from it all?
Well, without revealing personal secrets, I really think that the CEO's job today is very close to training like an Olympian. You have to be as fit as an Olympian to manage stress, essentially. You have to be in very good shape. So in the morning, every day, I take the dog for a 30-minute walk around the block. I sit at my desk at 8 o'clock in the morning. I have a lunch break, which is imposed by my wife. And in the evening, I do some cardio exercise. I do spinning. And at weekends, I take the bicycle out, and I cycle a lot. And during the day, I've discovered a fantastic exercise, which is called the cardio regulation. It's a moment of connection between the brain and the heart, where it's a very short 5-6 minutes meditation, where you connect your breathing with the rhythm of your heart. You do that 2 or 3 times a day. And I can tell you, this is an incredible, very powerful solution. That doesn't take long, but it does help to cope, especially when you have very stressful moments.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill. I'm speaking with Jean-Christophe Bedos, CEO of Maison Berks. Are you an introvert or more of an extrovert?
If I don't answer, does it prove that I'm introvert? Or I'm probably an extroverted introvert. I think by nature I'm an introvert because I'm very happy spending time with myself. I never feel alone. I never feel bored. And I am probably an extrovert by the nature of my job, because I have to communicate. I have to take care of people. And you need, obviously, to be extrovert in order to achieve this. But does it make sense, an extroverted introvert?
Absolutely. We call that an ambivert to some degree, but that's another story for another time. You moved to Canada to become the CEO of Berks. How different is it being CEO as opposed to a senior executive as you were before? Is it a different game?
I was CEO before for 7 years in Paris. I was the CEO of Boucheron, the jeweler, great jeweler from Place Vendôme in Paris. I mean, it's a good question. I think one of the characteristics of being a CEO is that you have a lot of time when you're alone. You know, you have to manage solitude. That I suppose the same feeling, this very strong sense of responsibility, and being the person in charge, being accountable. You're not just accountable in front of the board. You're accountable in front of all the employees because they are watching you. It's not risky. It's not dangerous. I don't see this as a risk. I just see this as a responsibility. It's a business responsibility, but it's also a social responsibility.
So you had a wonderful job as CEO in Paris. What brought you to Montreal and to run Berks?
Why leave a beautiful place like Paris and a beautiful job location like Place Vendôme in Paris? It's a sense of adventure, most certainly. But also, my wife and I, we made all our decisions together, and we wanted to expose our 4 children to something new, something different, and help them discover that the world is not just about France. In general, you very well know that the French like to think that God created, created the paradise, and the French were part of this. No disrespect, but I think as parents, our responsibility is to expose our children to as many different facets of the world as possible. And frankly, it's not a very risky choice when we decided that Montreal would be a great place. It's a bilingual city, and we were already a bilingual family because my wife is not French. It's a city with culture. It's a city of strong tradition of integration and tolerance. It's a city where there are fabulous universities, excellent education, and therefore, for a family like ours, we felt this is the best place for our children to grow up.
This is the CEO Series. Jean-Christophe, thank you for joining us today. The show is produced by Marie LeBrasse. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Brian Callisser. Thank you for tuning in the CEO series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.